This is the Quotidian Report on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Patrick Martins.
I'm Ed Grant.
I'm Wolfgang Lehner.
We're so happy to have Wolfgang here. He is sitting in for Mark Mirabella, who's at a Producer Guild of America meeting in Los Angeles, and he's going to be calling in later in the show.
Yeah, he better be by a taco stand, man.
Or with Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
He's like, we couldn't get Steven Spielberg, but we did get Steven Spielbiergo, his Mexican equivalent.
His Mexican equivalent, yes.
That was
I saw the Simpsons episode.
That was very funny. So, Wolfgang, we're very honored to have you, but tell us, why are you here? Who are you? Tell us a little about for the guests that don't know.
Thank you. I'm a cinematographer, and so I do camera work in all kinds of situations.
And you've been advising on the network a little bit here, making it better.
And my lovely wife Melissa and I have been advising on the network a little bit, yeah.
God, what a buttery voice.
I know. You know, it makes all that, you know, nefarious foreign sound kind of go down easy.
God, yeah, I thought the Germans were more like, you know, harsh sounding, but this is pure butter.
I'm from Austria.
Oh, my God. So, Ed, tell us, Saul Mark, what are we up to? What's the theme of the show today? You had a big part in pulling it all together.
It's all arts, all hour. Out here in Bushwick this weekend is a big open studios event. We have your godfather here to talk about art.
Ronald.
Yep. So that's what we'll be doing. The creative impulse.
And what is this thing in Bushwick? It's a bunch of open studios where people could walk around and see different people's art?
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
And what kind of art? Is it like weird, funky, modern art or what? Like,
well, I would say it's probably contemporary art because it's all being made now.
Okay.
So, and we have some of the people who put it all together. We have a painter sitting right with us to talk about it when we come back.
Well, that's awesome. Well, who is coming on? So we have Mark Mirabella later. We have Ronaldo Vratilillo, who's old school. There's very little contemporary about him. He is like back in the 40s.
Are you
and
calling
50s.
Him old?
No. I mean, if you consider that he voted for Howard Taft young, then no. But and then who are your guests, Ed, when they do come on after the break?
Well, we have Chloe Bass and Laura Braslow. Sorry, they're the people who pulled the Open Studios together.
Really?
With artsinbushwick.org and wow. Leighton Hauer.
That's right.
Leighton Hauer is our painting guest.
We also have Katie Kiefer, the host of the main course, sitting back there. She might fire a question or two.
Oh, and you can count on that.
You can count on that.
Yeah, and I also
probably
think...
Probably a rude one, too.
Oh, excellent.
Easy.
And Wolfgang will probably be bringing us a little bit about the passing of...
David Carradine.
Yeah, the Kung Fu master himself.
Kung Fu master. That is... I have so many questions about that guy, but I'll save them. Yeah. So, well, I guess, why don't we just get into it? I mean, one of you can wear a headphones for sure if you want, or none of you, I guess. Do anyone need? No?
Okay. Well, let's start. Chloe and Laura, you pulled all this together.
Well, not just us. Arts in Bushwick is a very large organization. We have innumerable volunteers and a core group of about 10 people who helped us to put this together.
Hmm. And what was this, like, tell us from very beginning, all the way from the beginning, like, how was this conceived? Like, what did it take to do this? I mean, it's no easy feat to mobilize hundreds of people, I mean, across the neighborhood.
Actually, the mobilization of the people probably is the easiest feat, but I'll let Laura speak to the beginnings of the organization.
Sure. So, thanks for having us on. It's really awesome to be here and talk about the Open Studios that's going on this weekend. It's a really great event. It's the third year that we've put this on in Bushwick. It's the Bushwick Open Studios and Arts Festival. And the beginnings of the organization, we started in 2006, planning the 2007 Open Studios, which was a really awesome sort of just a grassroots effort. A lot of people came out that were interested in seeing a big Open Studios event out here, different artists and performers, community organizers, all kinds of folks in the neighborhood who are part of this sort of really great collaborative, polyphonic art scene out here. And so they sort of wanted to come together and put together this community event. And so it's the third year that we've done it, and it's gotten bigger and bigger every year. We also have two other festivals every year. We have a fall event that's centered around curation and encouraging artists to work together to create curated collaborative group shows.
Does meat curing fall into that category?
Absolutely.
That's an art form, culinary art.
Absolutely. I mean, and we can talk about that later. I mean, when you guys were talking about what kind of art is in the festival, the definition of sort of what we do is incredibly broad. And, you know, it's cultural production, it's performance, it's music, film, video, technology, design, fine arts, really anything that people want to do. And, you know, a lot of folks in the neighborhood work in multiple mediums. A lot of folks are interested in community events and community projects, as well as art production and making objects. So the event, the Open Studios event, really, I think it's incredibly open, and it allows sort of anybody in the neighborhood who wants to come out and do something to do something just on this one weekend.
Cool. And last night you had a cabaret?
Yes, we did. I was the cabaret producer. I'm guilty. yes, we had a cabaret at Star Space, which has been our cabaret hosting venue for 2 years, thanks to Jules de Balancourt and all of his amazing staff members.
How did that go?
It went really well. We were graced with a performance from Andrew Nemmer and his dance company CPD Plus. They're tap dancers. They're absolutely incredible. And I feel like any show that involves them is bound to be electric. So it was a good night. We also had some local artist performers. We had some nudity. It was very tasteful.
Yeah. Cabarets are supposed to be a little raunchy, right?
Yeah, well, this was technically a high society cabaret, but I feel like high society is also supposed to be a little raunchy by definition. So that came together.
The lines between high and low were definitely very blurry.
In Arts in Bushwick, the lines between high and low are always a little blurry, and that's how we like it.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good thing to have. Like, this place is definitely a blurred line. You know,
it's got the highest quality food, really, amongst the highest in the city, and yet it's also a kind of like...
I'm all about the shack. The shack aesthetic really gets me. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. So how many people came to the cabaret yesterday?
We had a suggested donation, and so by suggested donation, by the amount we made, there were probably about 100 people who paid.
Okay.
But so, I think there were about 150 people there, and that's good. Last year we had 200, which was like too many.
Yeah,
so. And that the pay per not pay ratio seems pretty good. And usually with artists, you have 100 who paid and 200 who didn't.
And actually, with the artists participating in Open Studios, we have an artist registration. They have to make a contribution, but it can be a fee or volunteer hours.
Uh-huh.
So they can either pay $30 or they can volunteer for 3 hours.
Okay.
And this year, I think it was about. It was a little more than half paid and the rest volunteered. And that means that we have about 90 to 100 participating artists who are out there in public helping orient people in the festival, talking to people, helping to run the cabaret and other events that we have. And, you know, we just think it's really important for artists in the community to contribute to the festival, whether it's time or money.
Oh, yeah, no.
That's how I got into all my folk festivals growing up. I'd have to work in the mess hall for 3 hours and... It was also those same folk festivals that just made me lose my train of thought with all the drugs. No, just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have done any of the work that we did last night without the volunteers that we had. And I just think it's valuable for people to see how much work goes into it. Even if you're only doing it for 3 hours, you have a good sense of what we go through for 3 months or more.
Any shout-outs you want to give? Any volunteer particularly who just didn't...
Oh, gosh. I'm going to give a shout-out to all the volunteers, but I would like to specifically give a shout-out to our volunteer coordinator, Todd, because without...
What's his last name? We'll put him on the website.
Leibowitz.
Todd Leibowitz.
Yeah.
Good job, Todd.
Without Todd, like, nothing. Just crazy. 90 people wandering around in circles. I don't know what would have happened.
He helped the whole event take off.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't say this before, but we are all volunteer. Mm-hmm. Like, none of us get any sort of cash payment of any kind.
Oh, it's like us here
work.
Too. Yeah.
Right. So, you know.
Easy, Ed.
So, you know, we're all break even when artists contribute to the festival. It goes to printing and insurance, all this other stuff. So there are people who work year round as like a job who don't make any money from it. And that's us. And a bunch of other people. It's not just us. I mean, there's probably 8 or 10 people who work hundreds of hours a year on this event and on other events and programs that we do as Arts in Bushwick, that, you know, it's really important to us that folks in the community, that the artists that we're working with also understand mm-hmm. that they can take leadership as well, and that none of us are staff, none of us are more professional or more like sort of official than anybody else. It's a very open structure. Anybody who wants to come and do something should come and do it, and that's how these things grow and develop. And
do you take a percentage of all the art sold over this weekend? Does your are you a nonprofit?
No. We're not even a nonprofit, actually. But we're fiscally
not
sponsored.
That sounds okay.
We're fiscally sponsored by Fractured Atlas. We don't take any money from the festival except through donations.
Unbelievable.
So art sold is totally responsible to the artist.
That's great.
Right.
How do you do your fundraising?
We walk around and ask people for money.
Door to door, huh? Old school.
Well, we have a sponsorship team, and basically they solicit local businesses and individual donors where mm-hmm. appropriate and necessary. Individual donors generally come to us, but our sponsorship team solicits donations from local businesses, and everybody has been tremendously supportive, especially this year, actually, which is great considering that we are in the middle of a recession. We got as much support as ever. And we're really grateful.
On that note, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with all of y'all. And I have some questions about exactly where it is and what who these artists are and how you meet them and such. So we'll be right back on the Q Report. What happened?
Hi, we're back with the Q Report. The Q Report is sponsored by Best Ham of Virginia.
Edwards is Virginia Hams.
Best Ham outside Austria.
Which was just in the New York Times, by the way.
And I think they mentioned that. You know, it was way better than Austrian ham.
That's why I moved here.
So we're back. I'm Ed.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Wolfgang.
And we're speaking to the fine folks from artsinbushwick.org.
What an honor.
And we're talking about the open studios this weekend out here. We're with Laura, Chloe, and Leighton. Leighton's a painter who we haven't badgered with questions yet, but he'll be coming up shortly. So
now, what is the region of, this arts festival? I mean, do you have a circumference, or what do you call it, a boundary zone?
Well, we do have a boundary zone, but it's a little flexible and loose right now. The festival covers about 3 square miles.
Okay.
It's not equally concentrated in all areas, but Laura can speak to the actual boundaries because she helped to design the map.
Sure. So there's, as you guys may know, some controversy about sort of neighborhood boundaries.
East Williamsburg.
East Williamsburg, yeah. Bushwick, you know, Bed-Stuy, Ridgewood, what counts as what. We're not particularly invested in actually defining what counts as what. It's more a sort of self-defined community of interest. Mm-hmm. So this is actually the first year that we've made any effort to set boundaries, which is only because the festival's gotten so much bigger and so much more well-known over the years that mm-hmm. we don't want folks like on Bedford Avenue saying they're in Bushwick and registering for a festival, which they will. So what we sort of have done is we looked at the last couple of years and where the sort of outside boundaries were of people that uh-huh. self-defined as part of Bushwick.
And you embraced them? Studios,
and we embraced them.
God, that's so nice.
So what we have is all of the sort of legal boundaries of Bushwick, Community Board 4 in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. So we encompass all of Bushwick plus parts of Ridgewood, Queens, East Williamsburg, and Bedford-Stuyvesant.
So if I allow my apartment on 55th and 1st to be part of the Bushwick thing next year, you're going to be like, all right, we accept 55th and 1st now.
I think we'll call that like Far West Bushwick.
Thanks. Yeah, no,
that's really nice of you.
You know, what we would do in that situation is encourage you to connect with one of the spaces that's physically in Bushwick
okay.
and come, because you're obviously part of our community now, so we would love to have you be involved. Just for purposes of people walking around and going to the events, we would encourage you to hook up with a space out here and show work there.
Yeah, very nice.
Even as it is, I mean, like Chloe was mentioning, 3 miles, 3 square miles. I mean, that is a pretty large chunk of real estate.
Yeah, and they're in Open Studios this year. There are over 250 registered studios, group shows, and events in over 125 buildings.
Wow.
And our map is, we have 7 map zones. We encompass, there are 10 hub spaces, each of which is near a different subway station. So it's a huge festival. We want everybody who self-defines in the neighborhood to participate. And, you know, we don't expect people coming out to be able to go to everything, but they have a ton of options.
Right. Wow. I mean, you definitely have it going on way more than they ever did in Red Hook.
And now, do you have any art happening in this festival this week?
Yeah, well, my art is happening in my studio. I'm just opening it up. I have a studio right across the street from Roberta's, really, in the One Grattan building.
Which is that big building right across the street?
Yeah.
Oh,
right
that
over
right.
there. I get to watch the parade to and from the subway every day. It's inspirational, to say the least.
I love it. Like 80% of the people on that parade smoke cigarettes. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and I get all that a kind of exhaust, and it's great, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your art.
I've been an abstract painter as long as I've been painting. I use highly chromatic and glossy acrylic paint. And lately, I'm trying to figure out how to combine my interest in paint and abstract painting with my intellectual interest in environmentalism and our relationship with the earth in terms of time and how people are changing the earth. So it's a work in process. I've been painting planets. I'm going to use that as a motif to maybe think about the big and small relationships that we have with
the world.
The 9 planets
that we admit are like as planets or
planetary? Well, no, I mean, I'm making up planets and having them speak as allegorical things or, you know, we have the idea of a planet that we see from space come as an icon, and then we walk around and the planet, it's very big. And we don't think about how we use it. So I'm fishing for a meaningful way to paint about our relationship with history in the earth and how that's going.
That sounds really cool. What? How big are you? Do you paint? You know, roughly. You know, are they giant canvases?
Well,
they're planet size.
Planet size.
Yeah, they're smaller than your average planet as currently defined. Yeah. You know, anywhere from 1 foot by 1 foot to like 5 by 8 feet.
Mm-hmm. So the big ones you can kind of lose yourself into and really consider.
Yeah, you can get sucked in by their gravitational pull.
Yeah,
for sure.
Sweet.
Good.
Yeah, I'll say the one that I have at my house is quite large and
really?
Very captivating.
Does it have rings around it?
It's not one of the planet paintings. That's an earlier Leighton Hauer work.
Nice. And how much do you sell your art for on average?
Well, right now, because of the recession that we seem to be or not be in, depending on, you know, how things feel day to day, it certainly doesn't feel like that in the art mill, the Arts in Bushwick Festival. But I sell my stuff from, you know, $500 to $3,000.
Oh, that's incredibly reasonable. I mean, you know.
Yeah, compared to the blown up, you know, commodity trade and traded art market of late. Yeah. But, you know, when someone likes your piece, you want to do, it's so much more gratifying to.
If somebody's going to live with it, you know.
Yeah, to get your piece where someone wants it to be. than to try to drive a bargain on one.
Right. Yeah, there was some people on a different competing network radio show the other day about this woman.
I hope it's not National Public Radio.
I'm not. They're going to go unmentioned, where a woman just did a documentary about this older couple who collected art their whole lives. Mm-hmm. And he was a postman. She was a school teacher or something. Both very, very modest living. And they collected art always. And they just donated their collection to the National Gallery. Mm-hmm. And it's full of important, like, Solowitz and stuff like that, that they bought when they were emerging. And it's just this incredible thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, people, you don't have to be a mega rich to start your own collection, you know?
Absolutely. No, that's true. Yeah. In fact.
So we have a benefit event every year where we sell works donated by Bushwick artists for $200 or less.
Wow.
And we have about 50 works in the show every year.
Oh, great.
Most of it sells out. I personally buy a number of things every year. And I'm lucky to have a smaller Leighton Hauer piece, which I'm very excited about. As well as a bunch of other artists who are showing in open studios, mm-hmm. and folks that, you know, may very well blow up, but even if they don't, it's great to have their work
to
in
live
my
with
space
it. Yeah,
and live
it's
with
really
it.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And is there a website that people can go to after the fact on all of the you know, artists that participated, and they can get their art during the rest of the year?
Well, you can look at our listings from the festivals. We actually have all of our past event listings still up through our website, which is artsinbushwick.org.
Okay.
And if you have questions about past artists, you can either click to their own sites, which are part of the listings, or you can contact us. And if we have the information, we'll give it to you. Sometimes we don't. It depends what people provide to us initially.
And is that also where people would sign up if they wanted to be a volunteer for some of these next? Tell us also about the rest of the year. You mentioned briefly your fall festival.
Yes,
what else
we have our fall festival beta spaces, and then we have a spring festival, early spring, which is the site festival, and it's a performance festival. So all different kinds of performance all over the neighborhood. It's a 2-day festival, and beta spaces is one day in November or perhaps October this year.
Well, you have to definitely keep us informed on this stuff, because we'd want to have you back before it. We want to plug it. We want to get, you know, get the word out there as much as possible too.
The easiest way to keep tabs on us is to join our mailing list. If you go to our website, artsinbushwick.org, you can join.
Artsinbushwick.org.
We will send you not too much email over the course of a year, but you will get good updates on what we're up to and planning the festivals and getting involved at all levels.
And people's emails remain private? I mean, you
completely.
Keep them, yeah, great.
Oh, yeah. I don't even know who's on the list, actually, which is
not even the email master knows. Wow, that's hardcore.
I mean, there's almost 2,000 people on the list, so it would be kind of hard to rattle them off right now, but we'll definitely keep you guys informed.
One day, maybe Roberta's should do an installation, like one day at Roberta's, you know.
That would be amazing.
Open house, pizza, sell art.
Yeah, blah, just blah, blah. Offer to open up the restaurant.
Best ham know. Outside of Austria.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have to move the containers. They're really pissed off that I just said that.
Yeah. The last thing I want to say about that is we do other things besides festivals throughout the year, which people can get involved in. We are very involved in community organizing and political organizing, work with a bunch of different folks in the neighborhood around, you know, questions about space and different sort of parts of the neighborhood communities and how they are integrating, working together. So if you're interested in those issues, we're not
like
going to talk about it much
now. Like Republican fundraiser type things.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we have, you know, we had a panel yesterday with the heads of a number of community organizations and our councilwoman, Diana Reyna, who was amazing.
Did she help with the Bushwick Arts in Bushwick?
She, not in terms of organizing, but she came out and to the panel and sort of talked about issues in the neighborhood and how they relate to the arts identified community, which was really great, well-attended event. So, you know, there are other things that we do throughout the year in addition to our three festivals that if people are interested in sort of the arts and political organizing and how artists are fitting into these neighborhoods as they change, they should definitely get in touch with us at community@artsinbushwick.org.
Unbelievable.
And you'll reach both Laura and I.
Excellent.
Fantastic. And you can still tour around, right? Till 6-7 o'clock. If someone's listening in, they can come in from Manhattan or the Bronx.
From anywhere. Actually, through the window, I can see people leafing through our program, deciding what they're going to go to next. And
awesome.
That's the best feeling of all.
That's great.
I'm so happy we paid those people. No, we didn't pay them. Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah. Leighton, what is your website?
My website is www.leightonhauer, that's L-A-Y-T-O-N-H-O-W-E-R.com.
Excellent.
It was a sound effect lightning for you. It was a cougar.
Cool. Well, we want to thank you so much for coming in. And,
feel free to have to run out now. We're going to have an old school guy who would have been part of Bushwick back in the 60s or 50s.
Yes. Even. Yes. So,
and he, by the way, grew up in Long Island City. Well, thanks for coming out, guys. What a great, great panel of guests on this historic Brooklyn Day.
Thanks for having us. For having us.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Q Report.
Hey
Patrick, this has been a good show so far.
Ed, what an unbelievable group. Again, this is Art and Bushwick Weekend. They got great press. Ronaldo, who's coming on now, was telling me all about them. And here they were. I mean, that was unbelievable. Great job.
Yeah.
And how do you know them?
I just, because of the Open Studios, I went to their website and I contacted them. And they're like great. The community out here is jaw-dropping, I have to say. It blows anything Red Hook ever tried to do away. Completely just blows them away.
I mean, I just love it. It's that frontier, new neighborhoods. You know, it used to be Soho, and then it becomes, you know, a new... and we actually, I want to ask Ronaldo about that, the art scene and where it's gone over the years. Ronaldo's my godfather. He's sitting in with us. Hey, Ronaldo.
Hey, Ronaldo.
It started on Madison Avenue. It started on Madison Avenue.
The art scene did?
Well, basically. It's where all the galleries were.
Back when?
Well, back in the 50s and 60s.
Hmm.
57th Street and then all the way uptown. All the, you know, really all the big galleries. And I think with a combination of a lot of artists finding more space downtown is really how you know, back to the 50s when guys like Pollock and de Kooning, you know, started to paint, and they started to do really big paintings. Well, mm-hmm. Pollock did them out in Long Island. But they just wanted more room, and the gallery seemed to follow the artist downtown.
And so where did it go? Soho was
well,
next?
Soho really wasn't well into the, it was in the 60s.
Early Soho 70s, yeah.
But I'm saying in the 50s, there were a couple of spaces downtown on Broadway, because I'm trying to think who the artist was. I don't even know if he's alive anymore. But one of the, like a Barnett Newman type, he had a studio, or someone like him had a studio on Broadway in about 12th Street, and there was a gallery downstairs. And that's how a lot of that started.
Right.
That's before I was born, of course.
Right, I know. You were born. I'm amazed you're even so well-spoken as young as you are. Just kidding. But so tell us about, so now then in the 60s and 70s was Soho, and now then it started getting into Brooklyn. When was the first legitimate gallery in Brooklyn? Or outside Manhattan?
Legitimate gallery in Brooklyn?
Yeah, or I mean outside of Manhattan.
That was really much later. Williamsburg didn't start until, I would say, the late 80s.
Late 80s, yeah. Or mid 90s is when it really started to pop,
even more popular then. Yeah. That's why when you said before about Bushwick, you said Red Hook and Bushwick, and then what happened to Williamsburg? You know why?
Well, yeah.
Because the rents were too much.
Well, when did De Souvero open his space? You know, the sculpture park. Do you know?
Oh, you mean in Long Island
City? Long Island City, yeah.
That's a good one. I'd say a good 30 years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, he must have been a pioneer in that area.
But no, well, he wasn't, because you know who it was. It was Issa Monoguchi.
Right. His space was there, too.
He talked about having a studio, you know, where no one would even think of putting a studio.
Right.
So that's been there for a very long time.
Now, Ronaldo, tell us about your art. What is your website, first of all? It's art.
ArtRF.com.
ARTRF, which stands for your name, Ronaldo Fredolillo.
Right.
.com. And you're born and raised in Long Island City?
In Long Island City. I even went to PS1.
Wow.
And the first time I went into PS1 to see some work, I said, you know, it was so horrendous because it was such a, you know, a complete mess of what they were doing. I didn't go back for about 20 years.
Oh.
I just think, oh, this is terrible. It was pathetic.
So what got you into it, if not going
to
PS1?
Well, no, not that I go back. You know, you'll go back and see a show that you know about. But it's just, some places do strange things. And I have this in my hand because I'm referring to an article that Howard Halley wrote.
Okay.
And it's basically about art and how it grows, or how it expands, or how it evolves. And a lot of it, you know, he doesn't say this, I'll kind of speak for him. A lot of it is just such bullshit. It's incredible.
Thank you.
Jesus. Jesus Christ.
Holy.
You can't use the word bullshit on internet radio.
Well.
Oh, yes, you can. No, am I full of shit? I'm sorry. Yeah. You can say bullshit.
No FCC here, bitch, man.
Only Ronaldo can say bullshit.
Well, anyway, that sounds a little heavy-handed. Yeah, I can be a little heavy-handed. But,
so that article you were talking about is some guy who gave actually a horrible art review to this poor Czechoslovakian.
Yeah, I feel
guy.
Bad about it. Yeah, not that you want to criticize all artists, but I'll go back to another story.
This is a similar tack,
but probably 15, 20 years ago, I'm at a Whitney Biennial with an old friend of mine.
Pico,
who's in the category of Eurotrash hippie. And the guy was funny, sarcastic, witty, bright. It was one of these priceless types. And we're looking at different pieces of art, you know, questioning a lot of it. He's making his remarks. And not to pick, but some things just get so ludicrous, you wonder.
Yeah.
You know? And I almost wish I was a lawyer or a doctor, so I could look at it maybe with another viewpoint, and maybe it might be different.
Right.
But anyway, so we come to this one piece, and hanging from the ceiling is a mattress, and with very crudely, tied together and ropes to the ceiling, holding this thing up, and it looks like someone took and spread whipped cream all over it.
Mm.
So
You hope it was whipped cream.
Well, whatever.
Whatever.
Maybe that was. Maybe that's what this guy liked about it.
Rendition of whipped cream.
That sounds beyond absurd.
But yeah, again, Whitney Biddy, they'll take anything.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I could see the curator. This is what we were laughing at. I see the curator walking into this guy's studio, seeing a mattress hanging from the ceiling, and saying, "We have to have this in the biennial." That's what was so funny.
That's
about.
Absurd.
That's the caliber of the work, typically.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be. But
well, no, but the biennial usually swerves from, you know, safe. You know, oh, we'll throw up another John's, another this, to the absurd.
And they do that. I'm not sure if it's to confuse. Yeah.
Does it make people talk? I mean, is that
I'm still talking about.
Yeah,
it.
But
yeah, it was 20 years ago.
Yeah,
not much has changed, and that's what I think is interesting. Is that when young Layton was here earlier, and he was talking about his paintings about the planets, and I look at a lot of artwork, and I'm thinking to myself, why does everything have to have this message? You know what I mean? Like, there's always this kind of. If you go to shows now, you see there's like an enormous amount of curating energy is put into explaining the work.
What the hell it is.
And I find that, you know, sort of it defines what is wrong. What is wrong, in my opinion, with what people are doing in their studios? It's like the interest in
art. You can't blame the artist in the studio for what verbiage the curator.
Well, if the person, if your viewer cannot understand what the hell it is that you've just created without having to have 2 pages of text accompanying your piece, then you have failed as an artist, in my opinion. May I ask you what you think about that?
Yeah.
Well, hold on. Let's ask our producer. I've seen the 60-second mark. Is there a 30-second mark?
I think we just
lost
passed
that piece
it.
Of
I
paper.
Think we'll be back, and we'll be back in a minute.
That middle finger extended was the sign that we have already passed it. Wait.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by our friends at Edwards and Sons of Surrey, Virginia. www.surreyfarms.com.
Do you know what that's based on? Are we on?
Hi, we're back with the Q Report. I'm Wolfgang. There's Ed. There's Patrick. And here's Ronaldo.
And we have Katie sitting in too.
Letting us know everything she thinks
Ronaldo.
Wrong with the art world.
Ronaldo.
Yes.
For a couple centuries now, we're living in a separation of church and art. Because usually the church commissioned a lot of art in old country, in the old times.
Yes, art doesn't need God anymore.
Now we have exactly.
Well, actually, the church really asked, you know, had the art produced for them.
Yes, but now we live in a separation of church and art. But you're doing a painting on the separation
of church and state.
Which still has not happened.
Yeah, that hasn't happened either. I mean, tell us something about your art and that piece in particular. That's your most recent piece,
yeah,
right?
But some of it's political. Some of it I do to be funny, or it amuses me, or it's a little vulgar, or it's, you know, just that someone can look at something and get the same aha as I did when I thought of it and find it amusing.
Mm-hmm. Like a clown, You amuse you like a clown?
Yeah, it can be, if you can laugh at it.
Is it like entertainment art?
I think it's entertaining. It's better than looking at something and just staring at it.
So give us some examples. Like, I know one of the pieces I have of it, my house that you gave me for one of my birthdays is a nothing is written in stone piece written in a piece of stone.
A piece of black granite.
Yeah.
Yeah. That piece has paid the rent for years.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's because people find it amusing. There's an irony to it. It's not a great statement. It's not a painting. It's a thing.
Tell us about nude descending a staircase.
Well, that's really... I like to do... many times, you know, when you think of art... So I thought of the painting of Duchamp's. That it's a cubist painting of what looks like a figure going downstairs.
And let me tell our viewers or listeners, you look a little bit like Marcel Duchamp.
Yeah, you actually do.
He does. True. Good job, Wolfie.
Anyway.
He does.
So here's this cubist painting of this nude descending a staircase. And I simply thought it'd be nice to take, you know, this is just a quick transition. If I took a nude and put her in one of those chairs for invalids and had her going down the stairs.
It's
attached to the wall and it goes up and down.
And I like your shark. Can you tell us about the shark?
Well, that's a take off on another piece of art. Damien Hirst did the gigantic shark in the tank.
Right.
And I went on eBay looking for sharks, because I said I have to find a shark, and I found a toy shark, and I put it in a clear acrylic cube.
And yours is going to last much longer than his.
Possibly, yes.
Because his is already
his
like
is
on
rotting.
Number two or three, and the one at the Met, my friend who works at the Met said within a couple of weeks was starting to bubble and ferment and stuff.
Yeah, and they have to bring in a
super,
company
yeah, it's nasty.
That restores it,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, it's just so beyond nasty. Not that that's wrong.
I'm a big fan of that. But then what else have you done? Well, you have one of your best pieces is the American flag waving in
I
the
did
wind.
That, yeah, I did that in 70. I did that in 76.
Is that still for sale? Is that like,
no,
for instance, on your website?
No, I've sold a few of those.
Okay.
Because people liked it and I didn't want to sell my original, so I just made
additioned
a couple
it?
Of... No, I made multiples. I made my own multiples. I found a guy who does roofing to make the... You know, the it's really... It's a corrugated aluminum because the steel is so heavy. I didn't want to deal with the steel again. So I made them in aluminum.
Tell us about Two Hearts.
That's another funny story. I was, you saw the title, I mean the piece on there. I had to make a Valentine for an old girlfriend. And I carved, I had this brass bolt on my desk. And I just thought, you know, hearts, Valentine. So I carved two hearts. And I drilled a hole in the hearts, and I put the screw through it with a nut, and I called it Two Hearts Held Together by a Good Screw. Another good selling piece. I mean, it was really, you know, some of them are easy, and people respond to it, so that's the plus of that.
But so it sounds like a lot of the pieces that you come up with have their source really in verbal jokes or puns or sort of twists on ideas that are more about the language world than they are about the visual art world.
But he's visualizing words.
But I visualize it by showing the piece, and that's also because I was in advertising for years. So you understand words and symbols. Right. People are used to seeing that. So, if you know, again, I mean, not to pick on minimalism, But if you show someone a complete blank white painting, like a Ryman piece, that's, you know, what you get is what you see. It's, you know, it's a white painting. And there's not a big thought process there unless you like to sit and stare at something.
And try to think
minimal.
Of all the things that white paintings remind you
yeah,
of, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, you sit and stare and then something else happens.
It's I have to say, you know, I'm a big fan of minimalist painting. I like the exploration of the form and the material. Cause
we should talk about someone like Donald Judd.
Judd, I find a little cold.
A little.
I'd have to say Reinhardt's black paintings are probably some of the most perfect abstract paintings ever made. I should say non-representational because it's a very technical.
Most minimal. I have a problem with most of the guys like
you. You have a problem with minimal and with some of the stuff in the biennial and its sloppy conceptualism.
Yeah. No, but you know what? Then we go back to minimal. What about Malevich?
Oh, genius!
They're beautiful.
Genius.
Yeah, then what happened? Everybody did copies of Malevich that were, you know, their versions of minimalism, and it fell short. Including when I said Judd with the boxes,
now, yeah. But
I couldn't get over. I just read something that Barnsdale wrote about Judd, And you know, he's spent pages explaining a metal box. I call them air conditioning ducts. That's what they look like.
But Ed, didn't you just read a book about containers?
Yes, I did, and that will be coming up in a future show on the Q Report. We're going to actually tell
what
you
are the next
more
shows?
More than you ever thought you'd want to know about a container.
Green building is next week's show, and then after
no,
that,
green industry,
green industry, have, then green spaces.
Yep,
got it. Well, Ronaldo, I'm a big fan, and I think that you've given offspring to artists. Your son is a director. Your daughter has a great eye for photography, mm-hmm. right? Your other yep. daughter is in commercial production and whatnot. So, thanks for being on, Ronaldo.
Well, you're welcome. It's a pleasure to. In fact, I don't know if we even scratched the subject.
We barely.
That's why you have to come back. Ronaldo lives right near me, so I'll drag you out of the apartment next couple Sundays.
All right.
Okay. And coming up after the break, I think we have Mr. Marabella on the line from sunny Los Angeles,
Production Guild of America. So we'll take a 30-second break and come right back.
Very good, guys.
Welcome back to The Q. I'm Ed.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Wolfgang.
And we have Mark on the line from L.A.
Mark!
La La Land.
Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going there, dude?
Fantastic.
Where are you? What are you doing? How's it going?
I am in Sony Studios, which is in Culver City, which is, I guess, part of Los Angeles, technically. But it's gorgeous, classic L.A., not a cloud in the sky. Just beautiful. We're here at the Producers Guild of America, first produced by conference, and I'm speaking today with Tom Beers about the art of the pitch, in case anybody is interested in that.
The base, the pitch of what? To get something produced?
Exactly. So if people are familiar with Tom Beers, he produces, most famous, a very famous producer in our world, my world being nonfiction and documentary. He produces Deadliest Catch, Axemen, Ice Road Truckers. He produced Monster Garage. He's kind of like the guy. And he's an independent. He's stayed independent. And he just recently had his company bought by Fremantle, a gigantic distribution company, for like $50 million. And he's still producing. And by the way, Ed, he's the thing we're talking about today, I meant to tell you this, is his new show is called Beer Wars, about microbrews. I'm going to recommend that he includes Lindy from Hindi, who is the head of a Brooklyn lager, who's got a fantastic story himself.
He was a journalist for a while. What is the reason for the show? I mean, the conference. Is it a networking conference?
Well, the reason we're, I guess so. My friend, my very dear friend, who was from the PGA East, I am currently the vice chairman. The way it works is PGA, Producers Guild of America, is a national organization of producers all over the country. Most of them are in L.A., of course, but second largest is in New York, so I'm the vice chairman there. One of our members from New York who came out
here.
You're
the vice chairman? So you got all the hookers up and everything?
Exactly. Yikes. I am the man. I'm the man to talk to. I have the Rolodex. She created this conference. We do programming, as you know, Patrick and Ed. It's talks and conferences, and I interview people, and just natural. And she thought, why don't we just I'll do this all for one weekend? And it's a little bit of producing 101 for people. It's also for connections and people, just like for the Producers Guild. What I like about the Producers Guild is I can come here and listen to people who are doing, you know, things outside of my field, so that I can hear what's happening in scripted television or new media or mobile production, which is all very interesting things, like online radio as an example.
Right. Very interesting. And what have you gotten out of the conference the most so far? I mean, what have you found most useful about it?
Well, for me, I just like, because we're in the East, and in New York, of course, everybody's are always connected anyway. Like all the disciplines are all together at the different conferences. So we're pretty tight in New York. And in LA, it's a little more disparate, but it's nice to have everybody at one place for everybody to come across the country to join in. So yesterday was very exciting. We had James Cameron here talking about Avatar, his new film that's coming out in December.
Does that look as cool as it sounds? It looks. I mean,
yeah, you know what we saw looked very cool, and you know, it's of course his first. He did a little show called Titanic before that, and
never heard of it.
Yeah, yeah, and he's responsible for some Terminator franchise, I think. No?
Yeah, and he's the co-producer of this conference. The reason why he was here is Galen Hurd, who was his producer. She's one of our members. She's fantastic, and she's like, I pulled out all my favors. I don't have any left.
Cool. One of the largest divorce settlements of all time.
Yes, in
Hamilton.
He was married to, what's her name? She was in The Terminator.
Yeah, Linda Hamilton.
Linda Hamilton,
and
right.
Before Catherine Bigelow.
She's got those guns, man, bigger than mine.
Ripped, man, yeah.
She's totally ripped.
God, everyone always says she was so ripped. Was she really?
Oh, in Terminator 2? Oh, man, oh, she took yeah. kick yeah, all ass.
That was not the
yeah. next week.
Jesus.
Totally pumped. And today we have, besides Tom Beers, we have Clint Eastwood here today, who's going to be here with his
Get
producing
out.
Partner.
Are you going to meet him?
Clint Eastwood. Heather, are you tagging Clint Eastwood?
Clint Eastwood,
that
yeah.
That is impressive. That's Clint Eastwood.
What is he doing?
You can leave. You can leave that. We'll eat outside.
What is Clint Eastwood doing there?
He is talking with his producing partner to talk about the collaboration, because most people, of course, know who Clint Eastwood is, but they don't know who his producer is. So,
He's coming out to give a shout.
Yeah, so it's all about the process of how they work and how they keep the story together and keep hire the team and all that.
Yeah, because even though they're loaded and powerful, they still have to make pitches to studios, right?
Well, I mean, you know, I know it's crazy to say, and people think like a Spike Lee, all these independents. I mean, you know, Clint Eastwood. Now it's Clint Eastwood, and of course he now has a track record. But his films, most people probably know this. I don't know if they do, but they're very small, relatively speaking. And when we say small, it means by audience. I mean, not a lot of people go. They aren't blockbusters.
Who's Clint?
He's not doing. Torino.
His last
as an
one
example.
Actually scored over 100 million.
His last one. Which one was that? Unforgiven.
Gran Torino.
Unforgiven.
Gran Torino.
Yeah, Gran Torino was his last one, but, you know, Letters from Iwo Jima, all of his most recent, the ones that he really loves, those, you know, he feels like he's put in his time for the big blockbusters, and now they're giving him back these little films that, of course, he's done amazing things with. Wolfgang, what was the one with the female boxer, right? I mean, that was a fantastic film.
Yeah. Million Dollar Baby.
Million Dollar Baby,
and
right.
And isn't he famous for, like, filming entire movies, like, in one take? Like, he'll just do it in 3 weeks, film will be done.
That was somebody else. That was Andy Warhol.
People love him. He's very disciplined, and he stays on track. And of course, he's been an actor, so he understands how to work with actors. And you know, one of the things that's interesting that I always thought people don't know as a producer: producers are the first and the last person on a project. So most projects, on average, take from the time of inception 7 years from start to finish. Now, an actor, just to give you an example, what that means in timeline: shooting only takes generally 6 weeks. So you know, if the actors show up for 6 weeks, that's a lot of planning and money, and that's where most of the money goes usually for the talent in a scripted drama. It's only 6 weeks, but a producer's on it for 7 years.
But yeah. the interesting thing is that 7 years ago, people thought up something that was supposed to be modern and hip. And on the edge today, so they have to look at the future.
Now, I'm getting hate eyes from our producer Heather because we're running long. Hey, Mark, I think we got to let you go. I hope you have a great conference, and you better be eating some good food out there.
And you better be back here next week, dude. We were a little rudderless, although Wolfgang did an amazing job. But we had a great show, by the way. But you know, there was a lack of gravitas.
I heard a little bit of it. I heard a little bit of Ronaldo.
Really?
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Okay, Mark, well, you know, safe trip back, and I hope your little onstage performance this afternoon goes well.
Give our regards to Clint Eastwood.
Think of everyone in their underwear.
I will. I always do, Patrick. I'm putting pants on you back. Putting pants back on you right now, though.
Yeah. All right, fantastic.
Ciao, man.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Hi, we're back with the Q Report. I'm Wolfgang.
I'm Ed.
I'm Patrick.
And we mourn the death of David Carradine, who was found in a hotel room in Bangkok a couple of days ago at the age of 72. He was there to shoot a movie.
Yeah,
I think.
He's starting to shoot a new movie. Yep.
And there's stupid rumors, or
what?
Not stupid rumors.
I don't know, man. If it's true, 72. I mean, what I didn't believe at first is the guy's 72 years old and he's still, you know, got the energy to rub one out. It's just a question of how he had to rub one out. That is the
in a place question. Where you can buy anything. Kind of sex you like.
Anything, yes.
But he'll be fondly remembered.
What did you like?
Whoa.
Oh.
What do we got?
I seek not to know all the answers, but to understand the questions.
That, we all know, is from what most people know David from, and that's Kung Fu.
The TV show.
Nice.
It was funny.
What did you love so much about him?
He was just this soul figure with all the wisdom and all the physical effort to stay alive.
Was he the American most famous kung fu master? Were there other famous American kung fu masters like him?
American kung fu masters?
He was American
in those
right?
days. He was American. Yes, he was the son of John Carradine.
Yeah,
also
he is American,
actor.
But his character was half Chinese, supposedly. But
yes,
actually, kung fu. I would say yes because he was very much kung fu, the Chinese discipline, Shaolin, as opposed to some, you know, rockhead, you know, what's his name, dude from Texas, you know, Walker Texas Ranger guy.
Yeah.
And he was more karate, just, you know,
John McCain's guy.
Yeah, can't even remember his name. Completely,
Walker Texas Ranger.
Ranger, yeah,
yeah.
Chuck Norris.
Chuck
yes,
Norris.
Chuck Norris. So. But yeah,
Chuck, you suck.
who would win in a fight?
Oh man,
now
David.
Chuck Norris would win because he would fight a dead body.
Right. Okay. Good job, Wolfgang. Good. That's right. Testing you there. No, but that's sad that he passed. So it's still a mystery on how he passed. But he was one of the, you know, guys to bring kung fu to America, basically.
Yeah, or his television show did, and he learned kung fu actually a little later.
Yeah. No, I would say the person who brought it here full on was Bruce Lee.
Totally.
You know, Bruce Lee was the man.
Yeah, and initially he was supposed to be Kung Fu for the television show, and then they didn't cast him or they didn't hire him because apparently he was not that good an actor, which I cannot judge because whatever I see of him on the screen was great.
But he was lit very well. That you can judge.
Yeah. Yeah, when I watched the show in Austria, it was interesting. In Austria, you get all the stuff dubbed into German, and the title song was different. It was not that beautiful melody that we heard. They actually played this.
Okay. Now,
Nat, you're amazing, Nat.
Nat, man, Nat, you let me down,
awesome.
Dude. This song is so racist, I can't even stand it. Funky China Man from Funky Chinatown. I mean, come on.
They only played the first couple bars.
Okay.
And I watched it on my small black and white TV set, and it was so crisp and clear that him walking through the desert was just a delight to watch, even on a black and white TV movie.
Well, thanks for telling us about him.
And if you want to know how he died in those many movies he made, there's still actually 8 movies in post-production that he starred in.
Well, so the Kill Bill movies come out. Got him a lot more work again, because he kind of disappeared for a while.
Yes, then. Yes, cool. Yes. And there is a website called Cinemorg or Cinemorg.com where you can look up actors and how they died in their movies.
Very nice.
The best scene, the best scene that I remember David Carradine in was actually, because you have to imagine, he was the only actor who worked in movies by Martin Scorsese, by Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah, he was all
and Quentin Tarantino and Robert Altman.
Wow, that's a quadrifecta right there.
And I think he was the only actor.
Quadrifecta, I like it.
I think he was the only actor who did this specific quadrifecta.
Thank you, Wolfgang, honoring. Well, this has been an unbelievable show. Arten Bushwick.
Yep.
Mark Marabella. Wolfgang doing an unbelievable thing on David Carradine. Yep. And
Rinaldo
Fratellillo. Yep. It's been a really unbelievable show.
Yeah. Have an artist on. Talk a lot.
Next week is Green Industry.
Yep. We'll be talking about attempts to green up the film world, actually. We have a producer coming on with a very engaged in an initiative to green up that world. We'll talk about some of the building trade issues. Mm-hmm. So,
and we'll more charisma, more energy, maybe a new sound effect.
Sweet. What Please. Do you got? Anything you're working on? That's a little highbrow, man.
That's Baroque.
All right. Well, okay. We will be back next week and continue to check out HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
And I'm just going to plug myself for once, because my website is up, www.studio2g.net. You can see mine and my girlfriend Heather's work. Thanks.
Yeah,
nice.
All right, we'll be back.
Guys, that was... Thank you. Everybody was kung fu fighting.